In my role as the admissions director at Temple Grandin School, or TGS, we fondly referred to it as, I spoke with hundreds of families and students. And kind of one of the key takeaways that emerged is just students feeling really disrespected and misunderstood by their teachers, school administrators, and even fellow students. And I think in talking with them, just my acknowledgement of the different ways that they process the world around them and letting them know that we truly did understand them at Temple Grandin School really made a world of difference and broke down some barriers pretty quickly.
Welcome to the Individual Matters podcast. In this episode, our guest Leanne Peskvalich discusses the idea of neurodiversity, offering key perspectives based on her 2 decades' experience working with neurodiverse individuals and their families and connecting them with information and resources. She offers specific, practical steps that you, the listener, can take today to better understand and support neurodiversity in yourself or those you know or work with. At the end of the episode, she'll talk about the important work she's currently doing through her company, Next Steps Consulting, and provide details about an upcoming neurodiversity resource fair that will be held in Grand Junction on August 10th, 2024, and that we at Individual Matters are looking forward to being part of. Now let's get started. Hi, Leanne, and thank you for coming on the show today.
Andrew, thank you very much. Really excited to be here.
I want to dive right into the conversation and to lay the groundwork for what follows. Could you just talk about the term neurodiversity? What is meant by that term?
Neurodiversity is the idea that people experience and interact with the world around them in many ways, and that there's actually no one right way of thinking, learning, and behaving. And when there are differences, we look at them not as deficits and sometimes even as strengths. In many contexts, the word neurodiversity is used to describe autism, ADHD, or sensory processing sensitivities.
So I think probably many of our listeners recognize those terms, autism, ADHD, sensory processing sensitivities. I believe learning disorders as well, would those be part of neurodiversity?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They are under that umbrella. So dyslexia, dyscalculia, there are definitely a lot of things under that umbrella. So you are correct.
And something that jumped out from the way you just define neurodiversity is that differences are not deficits. So just because an individual's neurofunctioning may be outside the typical or maybe outside the norm, there can be a lot of strengths in those as well, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, normalizing differences that they are not deficits. And I think that that can help so many people to just feel more comfortable and confident in their environments.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think when most people hear the term neuro, they think brain, diversities, differences, and it really makes sense that all of our brains work differently and we think and learn differently and interact with others differently and experience the world and ourselves in it all in unique ways. So that really makes a lot of sense. Are there any other terms or phrases that you come across in your work that are commonly used instead of or associated with neurodiversity? Anything that might catch the ear of listeners?
I think, you know, like you said, learning disabilities, of course, autism, autism spectrum disorder, ADHD. I think under that umbrella, we can also consider mental health issues of different ways of processing the world, even with depression and anxiety. So, you know, many of the clinical terms that we use are under the umbrella of neurodiversity, and I don't want to equate them as exactly synonymous, but I think under the umbrella, I think is where I'm comfortable saying that.
In your field, do you find, are there any common beliefs about neurodiversity that are actually myths or are untrue that commonly come up in your line of work that you wanted to clarify?
I think it goes back to the deficit kind of lens to it. And just personally and professionally, I am always putting a strengths-based lens. And I think that's where what we could all benefit from. And I know that's not possible all the time because let's face it, challenges are challenges. But, you know, I think neurodiversity for some people might have a connotation of deficit. And I think we need to step away from that.
That's a really good point. Looking more at strengths and just uniqueness. So you have 2 decades experience working with and supporting neurodiverse individuals and their families, including your involvement in special education, being a support group facilitator and a board member of the Autism Society of Colorado, to working with Children's Hospital. And I believe you've worked with universities as well, but I really wanted to hone in on 2 particular experiences and how those have shaped the work that you do and what you can share with listeners. The first is your role as Director of Admissions and Public Relations at the Temple Grandin School in Boulder, Colorado. How do you feel like that experience shaped your understanding of the unique gifts and challenges faced by neurodiverse individuals?
In my role as the admissions director at Temple Grandin School, or TGS, we fondly referred to it as, I spoke with hundreds of families and students. And kind of one of the key takeaways that emerged is just students feeling really disrespected and misunderstood by their teachers, school administrators, and even fellow students. And I think in talking with them, just my acknowledgement of the different ways that they process the world around them and letting them know that we truly did understand them at Temple Grandin School really made a world of difference and broke down some barriers pretty quickly for some of those students. The Temple Grandin School is a strengths-based program. And in thinking about that, really working with kids from where they're at, you know, what is the baseline, and understanding, you know, kind of their lens, reduced anxiety. And when that anxiety is reduced, then I think academic progress increases, social interaction, emotional regulation. Anxiety can really be, you know, a barrier to kids blossoming. And so reducing that anxiety, kids blossomed. We started to uncover, or they were able to lean into their strengths and really make amazing progress at the school.
Wow, that's fantastic. So they were able to see that they do think differently from others and that probably everybody does in their own way, and to, instead of focusing on what they believe might be deficits or some sort of character flaw, they were able to see that they're unique and they actually have many strengths, and to focus more on those and be happier and healthier and more successful that way.
Yes, it was almost like a rewiring.
Wow, that's really cool. Just in the interest of time, I'm going to move on to another role that you've had, but this is something that I would really like to have you back on the show and talk about, because that's a big issue. And I'd like to find out more about what they're doing at the Temple Grandin School, specifically in terms of how to assess those strengths and weaknesses and how that process works. But the second position that I wanted to mention that jumped out from your background is your work as executive director of the Autism Society of Colorado. And I'm curious what you learned from that position about advocating for and supporting the autism community specifically.
I think one of the things I knew, but it was illustrated and demonstrated day in and day out in my work with the Autism Society, is how difficult it can be to navigate the systems that are there to lift people up, like schools, the educational systems and government benefits, Medicaid and Social Security. These are there to help people grow and live fulfilling and thrive in their lives, yet they are just extremely difficult to navigate. And so we provided support to individuals, you know, across the lifespan, connecting them and helping them navigate these systems. Another thing that I learned while leading that organization, which is, again, one of the things that I knew, but I could see it in the day in and day out, is a deep need for connection within the autism community, from parents and partners and husbands and wives and siblings to individuals who were autistic. I think that connection is so imperative, and connection kind of goes hand in hand with understanding. So support groups were one of the things that I really focused on. And this was during COVID. I took that position, and my first day was April 2020. April 1st, 2020.
Wow.
And so as COVID was unfolding, I was, you know, bringing my skills to this organization and, you know, knowing that connection was needed, I rolled out virtual support groups. Another thing that I think is important is just a need for safety. And that again goes back to understanding and connection, and how we need that safety and connection and understanding can bring that.
Wow, that's really incredible. I had forgotten that you had just taken up that position right at the start of COVID. So you had to implement many of these strategies and workarounds in hoc, like right then in the moment, trying to figure out what was going to work and what wasn't.
Exactly. And the Autism Society, like every other company and organization across the world, really had to pivot and figure out, you know, I think for us, the Autism Society, there was a pause. I mean, the phone didn't ring for a month, that whole month of April. And so that gave me pause to really think, what are the needs? And then once people started to reach out, it was about connection and, you know, how to connect with the agencies and organizations that were providing support, as well as how to connect with each other. And so it really wasn't until the third and fourth quarter of that year, 2020, that I started to put together those virtual support groups. If you remember, not everyone was Zoom fluent back then. And people who are on the spectrum, autistic, and their families, you know, it, as long as everyone else too, had to kind of get up to speed with our virtual living situation. And so, you know, I started to roll those out in the second and third quarter, and they really took off in 2022. Many of them still exist today at the Autism Society. I'll talk about that in a little bit, as well as, you know, figuring out how we could connect in person. And that was a little bit later.
That's amazing. Yeah, I was going to ask next how those are doing now and how those have evolved and what the response was, but I don't want to get ahead of our conversation, so we can come back around to that. One of the things we try to do with this podcast is give listeners simple, practical steps or perspectives that they can apply in their lives immediately. So right after finishing up listening to this podcast episode, what are some things that they can go ahead and do? So thinking back to your broad and deep experience in the field of neurodiversity, what are some practical steps that you could offer neurodevelopmental or neurodiverse individuals or their parents or whoever may work with them in terms of what they can implement now or what they should do today?
I think one something that people could do immediately is just stop and think about their support base. What is your support base? How robust is it? Do you feel secure in your connections for support? So kind of an evaluation of that. And next, you know, if there are holes in that base, what you can do to fill those holes. I talk to people often about, you know, finding your tribe. And that can be with parents of kids who have special needs, but also, you know, siblings and partners, and then the individual who is neurodiverse, finding your tribe. So I think that's one of the things. And then also figuring out what the strengths are for that neurodiverse individual, you know, and based on where they are in the lifespan, and I work with people across the lifespan, it's going to look different. But thinking about, you know, what the special interests are, using those for that connection, and going back to that, I think something that, you know, people can do is looking around their community. So the Autism Society of Colorado is a statewide organization. That said, many of the things that they do in person are along the Front Range. They do have a number of different virtual support groups where people could join, and those are offered multiple times a month. And I would add that, you know, out on the Western Slope, if there are individuals who are interested in starting a support group in person and, you know, creating meetups, contact the Autism Society, because they are most definitely looking for folks who want to partner with them and bring people together for connection. Another organization that comes to mind for parent connection and support is Parent to Parent of Colorado. They have an amazing parent mentor program, and that is not just for parents of neurodiverse kids. Across the spectrum of disability, they can pair you with a parent mentor. They have amazing virtual support groups, a parent community online, as well as on social media. In terms of getting support, connecting to the different services and agencies across the state, Peak Parent Center is a wonderful organization that can advise on educational advocacy. Family Voices supports individuals and families in connecting and navigating the different public benefit systems. Another thing worth mentioning, you know, social media, it can be a blessing and a curse in many different realms, but I think in terms of connection and, you know, finding connection through special interests and support, there are a number of different open Facebooks and closed Facebook groups in different areas, autism, disability, Down syndrome, and that's another place to connect. And, you know, you can do that at your own speed. So that's another benefit of social media. There are the lurkers out there who join groups and just kind of like scan and see what's going on and what the resources are. There are others who participate, you know, in a much different fashion and are very active, but either way can work.
That's such a great point. Yeah, social media gets a lot of publicity for all the downsides, but you're right. It's such a great way to connect, and it allows everyone to connect in a way that's comfortable to them, you know, in a way that they feel good about, whether they're more extroverted or introverted or wherever they meet. So that's a really good point. Those other resources that you mentioned, I'll make sure to go ahead and include those in the show notes too. So thank you for sharing those. The other thing that you had mentioned was the importance of identifying and leveraging the personal strengths of neurodiverse individuals. How do they, can you talk a little bit about that?
Definitely. I think whether you're an individual who is neurodiverse or you're a parent kind of navigating, I think questions that you can ask is, what am I good at and what do I enjoy? And along with that is, you know, where do I feel safe? And I think that the go-to for a lot of people would be like, I feel safe at home, so I'm just going to stay home all the time. That's really not what I'm getting at here. I think thinking about, and this goes back to something that Temple Grandin, who is a famous woman with autism and autism activist. It's, you know, kind of grow from your strengths. Think about what you're good at. Focus on those things, because those are things and skills that you're going to enjoy building and working on. And that can be with schooling as well as employment. So, you know, on the personal strength side, really leveraging those to, you know, enhance your education, go further in your education. Those can lead to different types of employment and exploration. And these things can change through the lifespan, most definitely, because, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And as we go through life experiencing things, we are always developing strengths and discovering them as well. And I want to touch on something. You know, people often ask me, you know, should I go for an evaluation for something that's challenging? Say it's autism. They're interested in finding out, or maybe hesitant to find out if they are on the spectrum. I always encourage people to seek out psychological evaluations for challenges that they're facing that are barriers to them, that are not allowing them to do the things that they want to do. And one of the primary reasons is a good neuropsychological evaluation is going to identify your strengths as well as your challenges. And oftentimes those strengths can help us manage and overcome even some of those challenges.
That's all great information. And my two cents worth regarding the neuropsych evaluations, I would agree completely. They should not just be deficit focused, but really highlight strengths, areas of interest, in order to guide an individual towards where they'll be most successful. So that's fantastic. Do you have any examples? I know you offered some earlier, social media and some of the different organizations that are supportive of neurodiversity, but are there other areas where individuals can find people with similar interests or have similar conversation around this?
Definitely. And something that comes to mind, and this was pointed out to me, I think this week, is I think one of the museums in your area in Grand Junction is having a sensory friendly morning. And I'm beginning to see this more and more at museums and different community gathering spaces. So I think that could be a good opportunity where there are shared interests, but they're also taking into account maybe a special need of one of the people that are participating. So, you know, tuning into those sensory friendly events, and I've seen them here in the metro area, and it's not a child thing. It's not just for children, but for adults too that have sensory needs. So you might see those at museums or, you know, different opportunities like that. Another area where you could find people with similar interests are classes and organized groups and meetups. These can be in person and online. And I don't think people should live solely online and that should be their only social connection, but there are different opportunities to connect with people across the country that have shared interests and can build connections that way as well.
You've offered a lot of really helpful, really specific resources and guidelines for listeners. This is fantastic. If a listener has working memory like I do, and we'll have to go back and rewatch this or take some notes, but just as a immediate takeaway, is there any one particular first step, if they remember nothing else from this conversation and just want to take a first step towards connecting with others or finding some support, is there any one of the different options that you've mentioned that you would suggest as a place to begin?
Gosh, that's a tough one because, you know, it's multi-pronged. My advice to someone would be, where do you usually find information? You know, is it on the web? Is it talking to other people? What are you actually looking for in connection? So if it's online connection, look on websites, the Autism Society of Colorado. If And then one step further on that, with the Autism Society of Colorado, they do have in-person meetups. They do have navigators that you can talk to. I think describing to someone either, you know, online or in person, kind of what you're looking for and, you know, your personality and what might fit for you. So I think identifying how you communicate best is very important. For some people, it's through chat or through online back and forth or email. Figuring that out and then using that skill or that comfort level to reach out to the Autism Society or on social media or one of the navigation organizations that I mentioned.
That's a great framework for moving forward because, yeah, then you can apply that again and again if you're continually looking at what works for you and what's worked in the past. That's a great answer. When we talked earlier this week, I was amazed at not only the connections that you make and have and your background in this in terms of outreach, which we'll get to in just a minute, but you also founded a consulting company, Next Steps Consulting. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Next Steps Consulting is really my platform for connecting people quickly and efficiently to information. So I work with people across the lifespan. I work with parents who have young children, parents who have school age, parents who have young adults, parents of adults' children. I also work with individuals who are adults, and they're looking for people who diagnose neurodiverse conditions or ways of navigating the world. They're looking for therapists. They're looking for advocacy. May that be school advocacy or even employment advocacy in adults. They're looking for social connection, recreational connection, all the domains of life. I am able to connect them quickly and efficiently after kind of hearing their story and where they're at to these types of resources. So I will say, so I am not clinically trained, so I'm not a clinician. I don't do therapy. I'm not an advocate. I don't go to school meetings. And I also don't help people complete paperwork. I find all the people that do that for my clients.
Gosh, that's so important. Yeah, you talked at the beginning of this episode about some of the difficulties many individuals have accessing the resources that are currently in place, but they can't find them, or they're not really sure who to talk to about it. And it sounds like you're sort of the center of that. You can be the center of that process for a client in terms of steering them in the right direction, very much like a guide. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. And I also offer, you know, just that kind of neutral listening ear, and also can help people prioritize, because for parents who are receiving a neuropsych eval and they go through it with the clinician, the psychologist, and then come home and have a million questions or are just so confused with all the recommendations, that's also something that I can offer, is to go through a report and kind of help them prioritize, you know, next steps, literally next steps to take. I can also be a neutral, you know, discussion person about the topic of autism, which can be triggering for some people and families, and a safe person to talk it through with.
That makes sense. We know that many, many neurodiverse individuals have executive functioning impairment and struggles, which include organization, prioritization, sequencing, getting initiation, activation. So putting together whatever information or resources they have and making a plan for moving forward. And it sounds like that's kind of what you help them do as well.
Exactly. As well as even I can be an accountability partner in getting that stuff done.
So important. That's great. Well, where can listeners connect with you?
So I have a website, and that website is nextstepsconsult.com. And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Next Steps Neurodiversity. I also have a website for the resource fair, and that is nextstepsresourcefair.com. I am on LinkedIn, Leanne Pask-Valich, and feel free to reach out to me anywhere. Any of those choices will work, and I'm happy to connect.
Excellent. And I'll put that information in the show notes as well. And you had just segued into our final point that we wanted to make. You're hosting or facilitating a neurodiversity resource fair in Grand Junction in August. Can you talk about that?
Yes. The neurodiversity resource fair is for people who are looking for resources and support for autism, ADHD, the learning disabilities that we mentioned earlier, as well as developmental disabilities. And this resource fair is for people across the lifespan. So it is not just a pediatric or a school-based resource fair. There will be providers there who serve adults as well as children. It is at the Convention Center in downtown Grand Junction on Saturday, August 10th. And, you know, my why for this resource fair is really access to information, making sure people know about all of the amazing providers in Mesa County, Grand Junction, across the Western Slope. There will be providers there, organizations and companies from the metro area that are very interested in connecting with people in Mesa County who work virtually and can provide services through a virtual platform. So it's pretty exciting.
And we are looking forward to being involved as well. Individual Matters will be there. So to any of our listeners, I hope you'll come out and meet Leanne and many of the other providers and resources. Meet Dr. Caton. I'll be there. So we're really looking forward to doing what you're so good at, which is connecting with other individuals and families and providers, just getting information out so that we all feel more supported and in the know.
Looking forward to it. And I hope to meet some of the listeners there. And I'm looking forward to just being there in the Grand Junction community.
Leanne, thank you so much for coming on today. It was a real pleasure talking with you, and I hope we can do it again.
Absolutely. Absolute pleasure. And I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
That's it from us today. Be sure to check out the show notes to learn how to get in touch with Leanne, as well as for more information about the Neurodiversity Resource Fairs. And as always, you can find more information as well as resources on our website, individualmatters.org. We hope you'll join us at the next podcast, where we'll continue to explore topics around successful living, learning and education, and child development, and share ways to help you live a more positive and fulfilling life.
The preceding information is not intended to provide or serve as medical, clinical, or educational advice. Individual Matters is not responsible for the accuracy of guest statements. All information should be validated independently. Please consult with your doctor, mental health provider, attorney, or other appropriate professionals before making any personal decisions for yourself or those in your care.